Hello, and welcome to Link Network Readiness Assessment. I am Tom Foreman.
I'm Brian Ricks.
And we are going to do the fifth module about network controls and network solutions. For the Link Network Readiness Assessment methodology. Right. We're going to go over three topics in this module, mainly going over the QoS. We're not going to dive into how to configure any of this.
Now, before everybody goes, well, there's a point, right? This is the network assessment module. This isn't the configuration module of anything that has to do with anything Link. This is simply, you can't recommend something you don't understand, and to make sure everybody's level set, it was included in the exam, QoS, call, mission control, and troubleshooting. So,
Yep. So to set some expectations, the target audience for this module, for this exam, for the corresponding course that LEX has developed, it's professionals who know Link and also know data networking, have some experience with both, kind of a decision maker sometimes in those when consulting. Here's the exact expectations from the course exam. And also some of the suggested material. The Link Server Networking Guide version 2 from end of last year is key. It is what a lot of this course and exam are based off of. And it is, you have to know the modules, the phases, and what steps are in each phase. So definitely be very familiar with that networking guide. There's the link to the English version of the 74335 exam. It's easy to find on TechNet, Microsoft Learning. So we've done several of them. If you've done all the modules, you've seen what a network assessment is, what Microsoft's methodology that they have developed for how you jump into a network and figure out whether they're ready for a UC deployment, a Link in deployment. And that included the four phases that you've seen in the other modules. Discovery, where you find out everything you can about the environment, including how they use it, how many users they might be in each site. Then you took that information to make some modeling, to do modeling so that you can determine what kind of users, what kind of modalities those users use, and then use that information to go to the simulation phase where you tested the environment to make sure what you know about the environment, the business requirements, the usage that the users will use.
The usage actually, the users will use the use of the usage?
Yes, and its usability. And you've seen, yes, the environment can handle it, or no. So this site's okay, that site's not okay. And before you jump into the recommendations, like Brian sort of hinted to, this module is going to cover possible solutions that you could suggest and just understand them before you try to recommend them. And so the first one is QoS, which is quality of service. It's there's some planning involved, obviously some configuration, and then you have to, part of that configuration is really just creating the policies, configuring Link as well. So what QoS is setting certain traffic to have certain priorities over other traffic. And you do that by configuring specific ports, specific protocols, UDP or TCP, and where it's coming from or where it's going to.
Right. And really, from a network assessment perspective, we're taking QoS and looking at it. How will it benefit a rollout of Microsoft Link in an environment to guarantee the quality of the communications, specifically of voice and video traffic? So we want to make sure that in an environment, especially where it is transplanting an existing voice service, that voice service isn't diminished by moving to Microsoft Link. That's never a good thing. We should have equal and, in fact, better call quality than we have prior to. So QoS is the mechanism that is put into place from an IP perspective to help us guarantee that level of traffic.
And it's not specific to Link. It's a networking technology that's been around for quite a while. It's used by different types of applications. And you got to understand if it's deployed already and how it's deployed.
What's using it? What ports are engaged? If you're on an MPLS network, what ports have been assigned, or what DHCP quality queues have been created? Which ones you can use? Which ones are free to use? Which ones are at cost to use? All of that's part of the discovery phase and part of the recommendations. But again, this particular module is just looking at understanding what QoS can do for you. So would you recommend it? And we can say just almost emphatically, yes, any voice implementation, with very few exceptions, should have QoS installed.
And part of that discovery is looking to see, are these markings staying on the traffic? And parts of your infrastructure can strip it off. And there are some tools that help you, easy tools to help you see if that marking's still there. Message Analyzer is one.
Any network
capturing, Wireshark,
yep.
Et cetera.
So
to configure it,
yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I can say so. When we are configuring it, the key again, just want to reiterate and restate the configuration of it. While we kind of explain at a very high level within here. By no means should this module or course or this training be any sort of indication of what it takes per se to get this done. We're not training on how to do this. And I know we stress it over and over. I just want to restress, and we'll probably continue to restress throughout this module. This is not Microsoft 70336 and 337 were both designed for implementing and configuring and supporting Microsoft Link and Voice. This course is about a network assessment. On the exam, there's questions about QoS, and you must understand QoS. There's questions about call and mission control, which you must understand, and also some testing methods that exist that you need to understand in order to successfully pass the exam. They're indirectly related to a network assessment. They are not, per se, a network assessment tool. So, go ahead.
Yep. And you'll have to understand that these DSC markings have some standards. Certain markings, like 46, is the highest. Has priority over other traffic.
Yeah, expedited forwarding is considered from an industry perspective what you would mark voice as. From an irony or non-irony, however you want to look at a perspective, the default within the control panel of Microsoft Link is 40 for telephony, which only applies to physical devices, physical Link-optimized devices, not anything else, right? Not any of the soft clients. But 46 is what is considered the queue you want to put things in for expedited forwarding, which would be the traffic that would be guaranteed above all other traffic. The other thing to keep in mind with QoS is it's only as good as the overall design of the QoS infrastructure. So if things are being marked because you decide you want to make sure these FTPs get over and you throw them into the expedited forwarding queue as well, well, all that voice traffic that you've marked to go in this queue to get there as soon as possible is waiting behind a massive 100 megabit file transfer to happen. You really haven't accomplished anything. In fact, probably made things worse by putting things in a queue that it's waiting for things. So the way QoS works efficiently is by having similar sized data, and in this case, extremely small bits of data because it's voice bits that are coming on their way over that are small and getting passed very quickly through and at the top of the queue. So it's more than likely a problem that the networking engineering people are going to have to figure out. But again, following along the concept, if you can speak intelligently with the networking group, they will respect you that much more and you'll get stuff done much quicker because you can speak their jargon and lingo. So that's very much what this is. It's just understanding how it works today, what's being put into what queue, and then potentially going higher or lower based on what is the priority of the organization. You know, I had a client that they had the only thing that mattered was from the mediation server to their trunk was expedited all link traffic, which would be mediation traffic and SIP traffic. Anything that came from the link application or in this point, the executables of the mediation server were marked with highest priority because of the way that they were reselling the service. That's what mattered to them. So it's not a one-size-fits-all solution. QoS can be different from both a costing perspective when talking about MPLS as well as from a need perspective of what's on your environment. If voice isn't the most important thing, then maybe video is, then maybe they're flipped. Probably not, but maybe, right? So.
And you would configure this per modality, voice, video, application sharing even.
SIP traffic, file transfer. Mm-hmm.
And you should, for the exam, you should be kind of familiar with how this lines up with other technologies that use QoS. Not necessarily know how Cisco does it or whatever, but just know how it fits in with the industry.
Yeah. Yeah, and the one thing about Link that's probably different from a QoS perspective, conceptually, at least in your mind, is it's backwards. And when we say backwards in the sense that we're watching source-based ports of traffic and they're sourcing application, not the destination traffic ports. So a great example is typically when we are talking from a client to server over SIP traffic, we're talking port 5061. But the destination port or the source port of where that's going from the client, who knows what that port is? It's going to be randomized unless through PowerShell and through the Link server, we have defined a finite port range for the QoS ports. And when we do so, that forces us to a limited range of ports that we know that those sources, and they should not overlap. And that's the key when you're defining this QoS, is that each modality has a unique set of ports and a number of ports. And we get through that conceptually, the minimum, if you really want to argue, it's 20 ports for particular ports, but not necessarily. That came back from way back when they were looking at the number of ports, and then they really argued, well, I guess it technically is 20, but really should be 40. And then when we look at 40, if you're an attendant console or somebody that could potentially have 3, 4, 5, 6 calls coming in at any one time, well, and you have a lot of IPs and or IPv6, well, perhaps we're eating up 6, 7, 8, 12, 15 ports per, 16 ports per ringing inbound call. So now if we only have 40 ports, we're only getting 2 calls in at any one time, so maybe we're jumping that to 100. I mean, there's all these considerations, and again, not necessarily something that's part of this exam, but it's understanding QoS in general and understanding how it works, and probably focusing on 336 and 337 exams and courses to really grasp QoS.
Mm-hmm. And you'd configure this, like I said, in Link Management Shell, mm-hmm. and then you'd also create group policies either on a local computer that are not domain joined or through the group policy for the domain that would apply these policies for the clients.
Right, and then the policy is basically saying, if it's sourced on port X and it comes from application Y, attach DHCP tag Z. That, it's very simplistic. It's not really a hard process. It's just making sure all of the things are lined up and everything is applying as you would expect it to be. But again, the real difference between Link is that we are a source-based application QoS solution, not a destination application solution.
Okay. Next topic is bandwidth management, which is called CAC, Call Admission Control, with Link. It's the technology of limiting the amount of calls over a specific network in order to maintain a call quality.
Right. And CAC is not unique to Link. It is a phone solution that exists on many PBXs. So this is just Microsoft's implementation of call admission control.
You've done all your modeling and you've done your traffic simulations and you know your bandwidth between your sites. You've figured out you can only handle 8 calls between these sites at one time. So you would use call admission control to limit it to 8 calls. You could either block the 9th call or reroute it. Something you would consider there is make sure if you're going to reroute it to the PSTN that you have that capacity, because now you're just shifting that traffic to a different leg. It can be applied to audio conferences or audio calls or video calls. It's not done by the client. It's all logic on the server side.
And it's from a CAC perspective, we have to consider that it's really protecting the existing calls, right? Because while QoS guarantees that the traffic is prioritized, shaping the bandwidth guarantees that the bandwidth is physically available to us. There's nothing that would prevent without call admission control link from oversubscribing that particular line and adding too many calls. So what we're doing is we're protecting the calls that exist and saying, link, you can only make 5 calls, 10 calls, 8 calls over this particular link. And when you exceed it, as Tom mentioned, it's either going to have a policy override potentially that happens, or a reroute that happens, or the call is just denied. It doesn't happen. And the other interesting thing, and from an exam perspective, is to remember, call admission control is controlled by the receiving party, not the initiating party. So when you call an endpoint, that endpoint checks to see if there's bandwidth, not the calling party. It doesn't make the check. It's the receiving party that makes the check.
And you can also reserve it for, let's say, you want to allow a certain amount of calls and a certain amount of video calls, so you could have both going at the same time, not necessarily crowd out one or the other.
And you can also use it just to prevent traffic. And we've done this actually a lot, especially in 2010, when we wanted audio calls to be allowed on Wi-Fi, but not too many. Maybe we said, this can support 5 simultaneous calls, and that's it. But block video. So set it so that the max video call was 100 kilobit, but 0 available bandwidth. So no video calls could ever happen over that communication, but only when you were on Wi-Fi, because we didn't want to block you if you were plugged into the network.
And make that user experience not good.
Right.
And then their perception of link goes
right
down. I was going to say something.
And you didn't.
And I didn't. So yeah, it's not about enabling a feature. It's about making sure that the call quality is good.
CAC is about protecting the existing calls and guaranteeing that you don't oversubscribe that line with link. Link doesn't become the bad guy on the network.
This is kind of a list of some of the components involved. Not necessary for the exam. You do it right in the management control panel, in link server control panel. You can configure sites, regions, region links, inter-site policies, etc.
Yeah, the inner route's the only one that you're going to have to do, inter-site route, so that you'll have to do from the PowerShell, from the management shell. But most of this is all done, or can be done, through the control panel. And you would, unless you had a bunch, which sometimes we have all kinds of subnets and things and sites that we're defining, and location policy definitions that are being applied to the subnets. And so PowerShell is the way to do that. Put it in a spreadsheet, suck it in. But it's not magic. It's not anything overly complicated. It's just remembering that we have to define the entire network, and the concept of CAC and the way it's designed within Link, you can typically wrap your head around it easier if you think of it as an MPLS implementation, even if it's not. That's how it's the overall architecture is designed, to implement with that in mind.
And so some best practices, and also you can use this. The magic number we've been talking about all day, or in the different modules, is that 30% that should be allocated to RTC traffic. You can use this to keep it within that range. You got to make sure you anticipate any future use. And if things change, you might need to reconfigure some of these call admission control settings that you have.
Mm-hmm. And one thing to also remember is, if you're going to have bandwidth policy override, and you don't want to impact quality of those calls that are going through, that means that if you have a segment that can handle 8 concurrent calls, and yet you have 2 executives that, or maybe they're not executives, maybe it's IT, who knows, but 2 people that you want to grant the ability to override those 6, and you don't want to impact them, then you really need to set the maximum to 6, so that if and when those 2 users make a call, that bandwidth's there. Because while we've said it can only handle 6, it really can handle 8, but we're going to stop it at 6 for general users and allow it to have the bandwidth to make sure it's there for those that are not. So sometimes it's about scaling it to the max. Sometimes it's about scaling it to what's acceptable to make sure things happen. And really, it can be a play. You're messing with stuff that...
It's just a checkbox on a voice policy to override the bandwidth management. And definitely use it, like I think you mentioned, to complement a QoS strategy. We already mentioned, make sure you have capacity if you're going to use rerouting.
Yeah. I mean, it really, again, from an exam perspective, we want to remember, cloud mission control works hand-in-hand with QoS. Really, one doesn't work well without the other. They need to both be there, because you can have QoS tagging, you can shape that traffic, but if Link's going to abuse the traffic that or the bandwidth, then it doesn't matter that it's there, you're going to oversubscribe. If you use call mission control and you don't have QoS, while you have told Link that it can support X amount of calls, there's no way for you to guarantee the bandwidth is there or that it's prioritized and will get where it wants to go. So one without the other isn't a great solution. We really need to have both in place in order to make this work the way we would expect it to work. So,
okay, we'll go on to the third topic. We're going to go over some troubleshooting tools and ideas, and as well as some of the diagnostic tools. There are synthetic transactions. There's a new feature of Link Server 2013 called the CLS, the Centralized Logging Service. And then we'll touch on some of the troubleshooting tools.
And again, the question comes, does this have anything to do with a network assessment? No. This is purely here because this was on the exam and somehow was shoehorned in. And so we want to make sure that these concepts are understood from an exam-taking perspective. But don't get hung up on these from anything else. And as we get into specifically troubleshooting, when we get into writing the recommendations, we'll say, well, we spent some time talking about troubleshooting, yet that it was never brought back up once we get into the actual writing of our recommendations. And that's very true. They're not. So that's why.
And you can also use these. One of the things you discover are possible impairments that you might have in your network. You can use some of these to find that out, configuration drift. And yeah. So the first one, synthetic transactions. Those are some of the test dash CS P2P. You can use these transactions to just create these simulated transactions between clients or logins or audio video conferencing. And it also makes some records with each one of these that kind of show you, you know, creating or joining or leaving a conference or signing into Link, et cetera.
Yeah.
And these synthetic transactions are used by SCOM, and you'll need to, as part of the exam, understand how to make those, the health configurations, et cetera.
Yeah, and really, from an exam perspective, we're looking at, do you realize that you need to make configurations for SCOM so that they can store the user information, the login information, so they can automate this process? Because without them, we will run the test commands and we're going to have variables that aren't there. So SCOM's looking for a kind of an encapsulated test that it can just kick off and initiate and thus test and verify and gather data back based off the results to give us the best chance we have at predicting issues in the environment. And that's really what synthetic transactions are doing. They're testing. You should be able to do a voice call. You cannot as of right now. I don't know if anybody else has made a call and has failed, but I'm telling you from a system level, we can't, therefore go investigate, right? So you're trying to be as proactive as possible in knowing that there's issues and fixing them. But yeah, that's what they're for.
Right. So they also deployed the Centralized Logging Service with 2013. It's a great tool when you have multiple front ends or multiple edge servers because you can start it from one location and have them start on all the servers at one time. And it'll also bring all that data, all those logs that it captured, back to one spot for you to search and do your troubleshooting. This says it replaces OCS Logger. You still would use OCS Logger if you have like one server or if you know which server, it's just easier that way. If you know this front end is what the person's homed onto or and they're having trouble there, just start it there and you could do your troubleshooting with the OCS Logger. I still use Snooper to check out these logs. It's a great tool. It's been improved. It has an agent that runs on all the Link servers, and that's controlled by the CLS controller, which is on each of the front ends.
front ends, edge servers, anything that's got data that's a link server. And that's really one of your advantages, is that it's not just your front end pools. It could be your mediation pools. It can be your edge pools. And all of them can be pulled all at once and brought into a single resultant file, so that when you're searching your data, it's everything you're searching. And that's where the magic of from the front end to the back end is over port 4443. That's the agent communication back to outbound and inbound to the edge server. So the agent does live on every link server. Link bits are installed.
And you can start it per pool, per server on a pool. And like I said, different kinds of pools. You can start it for global, different. You can start it or scenarios that capture data related to certain kinds of modalities or features, functionalities. And so, yeah, you can start it and stop it for each type. Then you can, you got to know there's four steps. You start logging. You stop the logging. You sync it is what the actual command is. You might want to know that flush is the equivalent of sync, especially for the exam. And then there's the search, where you give it whatever parameters. Yeah, you parse the logs. It's all done to the management shell. Mm-hmm. Some other troubleshooting and diagnostic tools. There's network monitor or message analyzer. We've kind of talked about that a little bit in other modules. The remote connectivity analyzer kind of allows you to...
RCA,
yeah.
Yeah, and so RCA has been around for a while, but it allows you to go from the outside and validate, can you get into the inside and make things work?
Are all the ports open?
Right. And today, and not part of the exam, but today you can actually download that and run it on your internal network as well to see does it work on the inside. So that's great to know.
And then the snooper, you use that along with the OCS logger or the centralized logging service.
Also, for those that don't know, we'll read client logs. It'll read any kind of SIP log. So it's got more value than just what it's reading when we do an OCS or a CLS log capture. It's actually able to parse things. Not everything, but it is able to parse SIP logs and SIP communication type logs.
And it has a great new function where you draw the call, and it'll show you each leg of the call, what the transactions in between each. There's the best practices analyzer. It's been around for a while. Event logging, I think we mentioned this in the previous module. It's great logging with Link. It'll tell you flat out sometimes what the problem might be.
And how to fix it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And don't forget just plain old command line things like NSLookup, ping, traceroute. Those can show you, am I routing the right way?
Yeah.
Is the latency between the hops good?
And knowing how these tools work and what their inputs and their expected outputs are, it would be highly critical for this exam. So basic command line level tracing and network tools are important to us. Not Gopher. We don't have to worry about Gopher. But we do have to worry about NSLookup, ping, and at least traceroute.
And also Telnet. Telnet should be here.
Yep.
That's great for
validating
services
ports
are running, ports open.
But when we go to UDP, that's not going to be an exam. Telnet's not going to help us there. Mm-hmm. So what do we do then?
There's other products out there, websites or freeware that you can do that can sort of like a probe, external probe that'll test UDP ports in Word.
Yeah, and port queries are a very common one that we see around, and that's the whole idea. You can put a probe on the inside, open up a port, and then go see if you can talk to it.
Yeah.
And if you can, then the firewall is open for at least that one UDP port. It may not be open for everything, but at least that one's open.
So I hope we covered kind of a lot of the different tools you might need, stuff you need to understand before you move on to the recommendations phase. You've done your discovery. You've done your modeling. Your modeling has given you these traffic simulations. You've tested your environment. You might have some issues. You think about these solutions as what you might recommend, and that'll take us to the final module.
That's right. And then we'll wrap that up with being able to say, with everything that we've gathered so far, we can successfully now create the recommendations phase and go from there. Thank you so much.
Bye.